Hello, and welcome to the Psych and Business Podcast, where we highlight the integration of psychology and psychological principles into the world of business and organizations. I'm your host, Dr. Ernest Wade. All right, so I have another fantastic guest for you today. Her name is Dr. Ali O'Malley, and she's an expert in leadership and team effectiveness. Dr. O'Malley has over 20 years of experience partnering with senior leaders across various industries. Ali specializes in the design and implementation of interventions to help leaders transform themselves and their organizations. She's also the founder of Reflection Group, a firm that specializes in virtual leadership coaching. And I think this is so appropriate given the virtual environment that we're all in and which is here to stay. And there is a nuance to leading in the virtual environment. So I definitely want to get into that as well. So without further ado, Ali, welcome to the show.
Ernest, thanks so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here with you today.
Ali, I'm so excited to have you on the show. There's so much that I want to dive into, but I always want to start by asking, tell us a little bit about your experiences, because I see that you have some experience working with both John Deere and BetterUp. And so I really want to know about your journey and how that has really influenced your perspective.
Absolutely. So I've had a bit of a zigzagging career path. And you mentioned John Deere. I went to John Deere by way of having been a psychology professor. So made a pretty big, bold leap out of academia into a global corporate leadership role. And it was vastly exciting to work for Deere, to see and understand what artificial intelligence really looks like when you're trying to transform a 200-year-old tractor company that started with a steel plow into a place where engineers are excited about building self-driving tractors. I mean, it was a remarkable place for digital transformation to be occurring and to be on the front lines of that, supporting leaders as they're, you know, figuring out what they want their beloved company to be next. It was wonderful. And I went from Deere into, ultimately, I did land at BetterUp, where we were thinking about how do you scale coaching, the power of coaching, to 1,000, 2,000, 10,000 people at a time? How do you understand who needs what and when? So I loved working in that problem space and thinking about measurement and impact. And then ultimately, I came to be in the way that I am now as a solopreneur, really able to tailor my coaching offerings to what a particular organization needs. I like that ability to truly tailor the work.
Yeah, I love your experiences. It sounds so interesting, and your journey, especially when you talk about AI. I love AI, so we could dive right into that, but let's keep moving on. I think the work that you're doing at BetterUp, you know, trying to figure out what each individual needs is really unique. Let's talk a little bit about the work that you do now with Reflection Group, especially with the name. Start with the name. Help me understand why that name, because I think that's really cool, and why that's important for leaders to engage in.
Thanks so much for asking. And the idea here is that we must take time to pause and think about what we have done, what went well about it, and what we wish we had done differently. The power of reflection in embracing the learning from failure is so critical. And we can talk about psychological safety till we're blue in the face, but if we're not creating opportunities in our days, in our weeks to really, again, pause, pull back, and reflect on what has happened, it's in vain. So I bring that capacity for reflection, accompanying it with insight into all of the interventions I do with leaders.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's so important for all of us, especially leaders, to take time to reflect. I think it's so hard for leaders, I know it was hard for me as a leader to take that time because it's taking away from other things. So I appreciate you really highlighting the importance of that and how it can help you be successful by taking the time to do that well.
Sure. I spend a fair amount of my current time working with chief operating officers out of an executive education program. And if you think about that role, you know, being top of the top when it comes to organizational operations, I think it's a role that's uniquely difficult to pause and reflect. And a lot of the leaders I work with, they're so tied up in being amazing firefighters that being ready to pounce and deliver value by just being caught up in whatever's happening in the moment. And it can seem almost absurd to some of them to take a pause. It seems almost dangerous to stop. But there's, that's where we go together. You know, what are you afraid of, really, if you stop and think about what you did and what you would do differently going forward?
Can you share with us some examples of how you've used that with leaders, that reflection time, and how that's really helped some leaders improve their leadership, better understand what they're doing and who they are? I think that's really important to share.
Yeah. I think a lot of it comes down to really understanding first, how does a leader think about their time usage? When do they feel more energized and more depleted? And mapping their critical tasks, their top priorities, to the times where they have maximum energy. And this is where I think it gets, where what's often overlooked is the time to rebound. We don't give ourselves time to rebound, recover after the intensity of certain events that happen in our work lives. Executives are under a tremendous amount of pressure. And so just being with them to remind them that it is safe to pause, slow down, and have that strategic thinking time, mapping it out in the day and letting your teams know. I think this is such a big part of shaping a new constructive pattern, letting people know what you're up to. It's not that you're in your office or virtual office, physical office, wherever your office happens to be.
Yeah.
Playing around, you're modeling that I have this protected time to ponder, to go backwards so that we can go forward together better. Mm-hmm. And that can be a kind of painful shift for some people who I really do think that many of our leaders fear that if they stop, that it will be devastating to them.
Yeah. You know, that's so interesting that you talk about that, because I think you said something that's really resonates with me, that it's safe to take the time to do that. Because I feel like a lot of times leaders feel like if they take time out of doing the work that they're supposed to be doing as leaders, you know, like giving direction and engaging in activities, that any time that they're away from those activities is detrimental to the organization. But I really love the way that you phrase it as taking the time to engage in those strategic thinking is actually reinforcing and helping you be better prepared for those activities in the future. So I think I love the way that you're able to communicate that and help leaders see that perspective. So I want to ask you a little bit about some of the way in which you do that, because I know that one of the things that's important to you is engaging in evidence-based coaching. So Talk to me a little bit about why evidence-based coaching, because we've talked about coaching in the past, but why is it important for you for it to be evidence-based?
Yeah. So I am trained as a psychologist, and I think about everything in terms of an interaction between the person and the situation. And we have a century of devising really good measures of what people are like, what their wiring is, what gives them energy and what creates, what they're repulsed by, to put it strongly. And so I feel such obligation to use good measurement, to get to know a person, combining that with interviews that have really rich questions about, tell me about your life. And so then we can form this full picture of them and then set goals and go forward together. And the measurement does matter, because there's a lot of measures that might feel good to take. They make you feel good about yourself based on the results. And yet it's not really showing anything truly predictive or valid about you. I mean, I certainly want to be a person who helps others feel supported, but I'm not in this business to make people feel, I don't want to give them woo-woo measures that don't mean much at the end of the day. So that's where it begins from an evidence-based coaching perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the distinction that you're talking about there. Is it's not just about feeling good, right? It's about really being able to make those impactful changes that help you and your organization be effective.
Yeah, and I think being really honest about who we are and what we are like right now. I mean, further being in this business of behavior change, I must, and the evidence shows that we can change. It just takes a lot of effort, and that effort needs to be well directed. You know, this is, and so again, it feels, I can't imagine doing this work without being evidence-based, because then it just seems misleading and a misdirection of resources.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. I think it's important that it be well-grounded, right? And as you talk about, I always say that I love to stand on the shoulders of others, and people who've done research are those shoulders that I love to stand on, because the evidence is there to help us. Let's talk a little bit about how this is coming out in the virtual environment, right? What's the evidence in the virtual environment? How should we be leading? How are things changing as a result of that?
Yeah, I mean, one of the top of mind pieces, I think, is that it is really imperative that leaders operating primarily virtually, they know the tools at their disposal. I think it's irresponsible for leaders, I'm sorry, I don't care how high up in the org you are, to be able to say things like, I don't know what's going on with my monitor, I don't know how to use these tools. It's your job to model understanding of that, because everything you do cascades downward. You're so visible. Mm-hmm. We need to be a good steward of the tools that we have at our disposal. So it's a little thing, but knowing your file systems, where to put and what, and certainly that's, I mean, executive assistants are indispensable, vital parts of organizational systems as well. But how leaders convey respect and reverence for their tools is really important. And creating.
Yeah, so if I'm hearing you, it's because of the virtual environment that we're all living in, it's incumbent upon all of us, especially leaders, to model a better understanding of those tools, those virtual tools, your computers, the logistics that are related to that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. A teeny thing. But I mean, no one's exempt from knowing how to do the nuts and bolts of working virtually.
Mm-hmm. So as a leader nowadays, where people have to work and lead in both the virtual environment and the in-person environment, what are those things that leaders need to be paying attention to make sure that they are effective leaders for both settings?
Yeah. I mean, I think the evidence really shows that we're seeing a backfiring effect of return to work mandates being universally applied. And there are lots of aspects to this, but part of it is that by and large, employees really do appreciate having choice about where they work and when. Mm-hmm. And part of the key to being an incredible leader in today's work environment is being willing to let go, loosen your relationship with control, and trust your employees to know what is best for them and their situation.
Yeah, especially if you're having people work virtually, that key word there for me is trust, right? Because you have to trust that they are getting their work done, even if they're not in the office and not messing around or doing whatever it is that they want to do. So there's that need for trust when you're dealing with that virtual environment. Am I hearing that correctly?
Beautiful, Ernest. Absolutely. And a lot of the work I do with senior leaders is exploring that trust dynamic and, you know, interrogating what's underneath you not trusting your employees, you know, or is it differently directed to certain people? You know, what's getting in the way of you being able to believe that they are committed and that their commitment is not evidenced by them being visible to you. It can be such a logical fallacy. So unpacking that and rebuilding that way of of seeing your employees through this more benevolent lens, that is, it comes up quite a lot in the work I do.
Yeah, that's so interesting, Allie, in trying to really parse out and help leaders understand the underlying issues in allowing and trusting your employees to be virtual. I want to add an extra layer of complexity to it, because I know you do a lot of work with teams and organizations. And so teams and teams functioning in those mixed model, half of them being in person, half of them being virtual. How does that impact, and how has that changed over time, and how does that impact organizations, and what's the evidence saying about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think bottom lining it, what's so vital is that the team works together to create clear commitments and agreements in terms of the rules that govern how they interact with each other. You can call it a team charter, call it what you will, but creating the norms of what we are like, regardless of where we put our butts in chairs and do our work, but you know, when are we available and not available? How do we like to be contacted? How do we want to be rewarded and recognized? All of those pieces are so vital to understand about people who you share goals with. Mm-hmm. That, you know, your organization's success hinges on you all having this same vision for success and not getting in each other's way. And it's amazing, Ernest, how often teams neglect to do that work of, again, establishing norms. What are we going to do? What are we not going to do? Mm-hmm. And just getting clear. Maybe there's a little bit of conflict that surfaces in that. That's okay. Mm-hmm. Conflict isn't something we need to be afraid of. And I help teams develop those charters quite a lot.
Yes, I love this approach, especially with the virtual environment. It requires teams to be more explicit in their communication and their outlining of their processes and their policies and their approaches. It really requires you to really communicate even more than you would expect teams to do if they were in person, so that everybody has a clear understanding. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is, it sounds a bit cliche, but it's so true that it's really impossible to over-communicate about these dynamics. And let me be clear, it is possible to over-communicate by like sending 37 emails in a day. That's a different thing. But when it comes to, again, these norms, you know, what does good look like that honor who each of us are as unique individuals? That is vital work and time so well spent.
Yeah, I so well said, Allie. I want to ask you a little bit about some of your psychological training, because I know that you're trained in industrial organization. Tell us a little bit about that training and how that has really influenced the work that you do and your perspective.
Yeah. So I have a master's and PhD in industrial organizational psychology. And when I was an academic, my work focused on feedback for peak performance. I have still this preoccupation with how do you give negative feedback in ways that people will hear it rather than reject it, because people need to know what's not working. And to tie this to the evidence-based coaching, how do we do 360 feedback in ways that feels like time well spent? So, but to come back.
I love that, because I think one of the things that I always say is feedback is a gift. One of the lessons that I learned early on is feedback is a gift, but it's how is that gift packaged and to make sure that it's well received. So I love that that's part of what you do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And let's talk more about feedback in a moment, if you would like.
Yeah.
One thing I would love to share about the psychological training, since you ask about that, is that when I was with John Deere, I had part of my role was as a data scientist. I managed advanced analytics and global human resources. And perhaps not surprisingly, one of the most common people analytics questions is predicting turnover. And we can do this at various levels of the organization. And I even have models that show, you know, where does the organization become most vulnerable if certain people do turn over. But at the end of the day, predicting whether one individual stays or goes is quite hard. And I would see us try and make decisions based on pretty limited data about people. So the message I wanted to convey there is that people are vastly complex. And if you're going to do good, you know, models about who is likely to turn over and when, you know, you can't just pay attention to the employee. You have to also think about their family system. You know, do they have benefits through your organization? Yeah. Are they partnered? What's their partner situation? So I bring that now into my, my coaching by really understanding not just this one leader or not just this one executive team, but connecting with them and understanding their family systems. What are their support structures look like? All of that plays such a powerful role in whether leaders can do their best work or they're, you know, fighting against themselves day in and day out.
Yeah, I really appreciate the framing there. I think one of the things that I love to say and really believe is that we bring ourselves, all of ourselves and our experiences to the workplace, you know, and so whatever's going on at home will impact the way that you are at work and vice versa. You know, it's this symbiotic relationship. And so really appreciating individuals for who they are and what's going on in their lives now and what has gone on in the past that helped them to see things a certain way, to have different perspectives. I think that's all really important. I think, you know, as a psychologist, someone who you know, understands human behavior and the mind, this is such a critical role that you play there.
Thanks. I love how you put that. That's a beautiful weaving of perspectives.
Yeah, thank you. Let's talk a little bit about the feedback, because that's one of the things that I didn't know that was an area of expertise of yours. So let's talk. Tell me a little bit about that, because I think it's so critical. Feedback is so critical to give and to receive. You know, that's that gift that helps you understand how other people are perceiving you. But if it's not presented well, and if you're not in the right frame of mind, it can really miss the mark and be very damaging. So talk to me a little bit about how you do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one way to structure feedback, giving and receiving, and make it normative in an organization, and that's part of a good team charter, is like how does feedback flow among us, is after, let's say that you're a software team operating on, maybe it's a 2-week sprint cycle. Software teams show us that you need to have time to have retrospectives. We can all learn from that. And that retrospective, it's timely, it's linked to the performance episode. You can talk openly, freely about what you noticed that went well and what didn't go well. And whomever's leading that, they have a responsibility to have documented what they saw that was good and that was less than good. And so I invite everyone who's listening to think about, where can you keep a record of what you notice about others, what you want to call out. And I don't mean call out in a judgmental, judgment-laden way. I mean, just empirical observation of what you saw that was really lovely. Let someone know before too much time goes by. And then an opportunity to make a tweak. Let them know before too much time goes by. And so
I love that.
Yeah. It's so sad when we wait, you know, half of a year, in many cases, a whole year, Ernest, a whole year. Like, are you kidding me? Our memory system can't handle that. Yeah. Write it down.
And people don't even remember what you're talking about. Yeah.
Totally. So having recurring, regular feedback dialogues is really, really critical. It's just less scary. It's less threatening when it happens a lot. It's just part of how we go about our work.
You know, I want to harp on a couple of things that you said there. And giving feedback is not just about opportunities for improvement. It's also about what's going well. You know, what are the positive things that people are doing, as well as doing it in a frequent manner so it becomes a part of the culture. It's also really important, you know, apart from the time, it becomes a learning environment where feedback is expected, feedback is given, it becomes the things that's just normal and expected in that environment. I think those are really important. Ali, we could talk all day here, but I want to be respectful of your time. How do people get a hold of you if they want to continue the conversation, if they want to hire your services, what's a good way to reach you?
Thanks so much for asking. I love using LinkedIn to share evidence-based practices, articles that I'm working on or have read that I think others can benefit from. So please, we can connect via LinkedIn, and you can email me at ali@reflectiongroup.com as well.
Awesome. And Ali, you know, I always want to take advantage of the great experts that we have on, such as yourself, and ask, what's a tip or a suggestion or something that you're able to share with the audience, especially in this time that we're all in right now?
Yeah, sure. So I think a lot about rituals for peak performance. And so I'll offer one of those rituals. As you're winding down your workday, think about what the most important thing is for you to do the next day. And have that file open on your desktop. And then as you're beginning your next workday, don't check your email. Please, please, please don't check your email first thing. Go to that file and work on that for 20 to 30 minutes. That's beginning well. That's setting yourself up for peak performance. Don't go down the email spiral, please, please.
I appreciate that advice. I think it's so hard not to check your email because we're all just conditioned to it. But, you know, as you said, when you have that energy in the morning and you have that specific work that you have doing, focusing on that can be really very helpful. So I really appreciate that advice. Ali, it's been such a pleasure having you on the show. You are so skilled and so talented, and I really appreciate you taking the time to come and speak with us today.
Thanks for having me, Ernest. Really enjoyed being here with you today.
Awesome. We'll definitely have to have you come back and talk a little bit more about some other things that you do. To our audience, thanks for listening. We hope you've enjoyed this episode, and I hope you will join us again next time.